Eisenhower nor Susan Bonamici are currently on it. So if you're in those districts, give them a call and tell them to co-sponsor it. It's not too late. It will fully fund our water and wastewater utilities across the country and go a long way to fixing the water crisis that we face. And if folks want more information about it, you know, you can go to our website, which is foodandwaterwatch.org.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We covered a lot. Hope to talk to you again at some point. Mitch Jones with Food and Water Watch. Really appreciate you being with us.
I appreciate it, and I had a good time, Paul. Thank you.
Okay, great. And that's all for Wednesday Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. Ciao, ciao.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO Radio on Wednesday, February 24th, 2021 at 6:30 p.m. for a special program, BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement. Participants will receive an exclusive link to view the film, BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement, and then participate in an online panel discussion with the filmmakers and leaders of Chicago's Black Arts Movement. You can find more information about this KBOO benefit on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the African American Alliance for Home Ownership's Asset Preservation Webinar on Tuesday, March 2nd from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. This monthly presentation is designed to combat gentrification and build generational wealth through estate planning. Again, that's the African American Alliance for Home Ownership's Asset Preservation Webinar on Tuesday, March 2nd from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. As the U.S. is grappling with its brutal history, and as the Trump administration used the July 4th weekend to sow racism and division, the movement against racism and for social and economic justice continues to grow. As young people take to the streets, it is good to know our history, what led to this moment in history. In May 1967, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King famously said, quote, "It is necessary for us to realize that we have moved from the era of civil rights to the era of human rights," end of quote. Later that year, in December 1967, the Reverend Dr. King publicized plans to bring together poor people from across the United States for a new march on Washington. And thus, the Poor People's Campaign was birthed to demand an end to poverty. In March 1968, the first gathering of over 50 multiracial organizations came together to join the Poor People's Campaign in Atlanta, Georgia, and to plan the event in Washington, D.C. although the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, sadly and tragically. The following month, the Poor People's Campaign moved ahead. Thousands gathered from around the United States and occupied the National Mall in Washington, D.C., where they established Resurrection City. There they remained from May 12th, Mother's Day, until June 24th, 1968, when they were forcefully evicted. 52 years later, amid worsening poverty, systemic racism, war, and ecological devastation, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, is continuing that struggle. It is a fusion movement. On Saturday, June 20th, 2020, millions of people in the U.S. and around the world participated in the mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington, D.C., a digital justice gathering. The digital gathering brought together poor and impacted people from diverse backgrounds who spoke out against their interconnected injustices. They came together with thousands who stand for human rights. Together, they're building a groundbreaking new fusion movement led and organized by poor and impacted people. The 2020 Mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington, D.C. was organized under the leadership of co-chairs the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber and the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris. Today on Sojourner Truth, we bring you part three of this historic event. If you've missed parts one and two, please go to the Sojourner Truth website to catch up. During today's program, you will hear more testimony, solidarity messages, and performances from the June 2020 Mass Poor People's Assembly. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. Congress is set to hear from former U.S. Capitol security officials for the first time about the massive law enforcement failures on January 6th. Lawmakers want to know more about the day a violent pro-Trump mob laid siege to the building, interrupted the presidential electoral count, and erected a gallows with the apparent intent of hanging Vice President Mike Pence. Three of the four scheduled to testify before a joint hearing by two Senate committees resigned under pressure immediately after the deadly attack, including the former head of the Capitol Police. Lawmakers are certain to ask what the law enforcement agencies knew ahead of time about plans for violence that day and how the agencies shared that information with each other. President Biden did something his predecessor, Donald Trump, wouldn't do as the coronavirus pandemic ravaged the nation. Biden held a moment of silence and offered condolences at a White House ceremony to mark the more than 500,000 dead from COVID-19. He urged the nation not to become numb as the numbers have reached a high that at one time was unimaginable.
The people we lost were extraordinary. They spanned generations. Born in America, immigrated to America. But just like that, so many of them took their final breath alone in America. As a nation, we can't accept such a cruel fate. While we've been fighting this pandemic for so long, we have to resist becoming numb to the sorrow.
Biden ordered flags at federal sites to fly at half staff for 5 days. Republicans are expected to give a rough ride to California Attorney General Javier Becerra at his confirmation hearing today to serve as Secretary of the sprawling Department of Health and Human Services. Republican Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas and John Kennedy of Louisiana released a letter which reads in part that, quote, Becerra's lack of health care experience, enthusiasm for replacing private health insurance with government-run Medicare for all, and embrace of radical policies on immigration, abortion, and religious liberty render him unfit for any position of public trust and especially for HHS secretary. They're calling on President Biden to withdraw the nomination. Democratic Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden responded, Republicans are just flailing around and haven't been able to find something that could stick in terms of their opposition to Becerra. Becerra would be the first Latino to head the Department of Health and Human Services. Republicans are also pinning the label of radical on Interior Secretary nominee Deb Haaland. Haaland would be the first Native American to hold a cabinet post. In remarks prepared for her confirmation hearing today, Haaland says oil and natural gas will continue to play a major role in the nation's energy portfolio for years to come. But she says the nation must address climate change and recognize the energy industry is changing. The Senate Judiciary Committee holds a second day of hearings on Merrick Garland's nomination to serve as Attorney General. He is expected to easily win confirmation. The House Budget Committee has approved the $1.9 trillion relief package proposed by President Biden. The vote of 19 to 16 sent the measure to the full House for approval later this week. House Budget Committee Chair John Yarmuth said it's urgent to act quickly.
This February, an American has died of COVID every 32 seconds. So while debate is important, we also need to get on with it.
The most controversial item in the nearly 600-page package is a boost in the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. There are also $1,400 payments for individuals earning less than $75,000 a year and extra $400 weekly federal unemployment benefits through August. The family of Ahmaud Arbery plans a memorial this evening on the one-year anniversary of his fatal shooting by three white men. Arbery was jogging in his Brunswick, Georgia neighborhood when the three accosted him and then shot him dead. They claimed they wanted to question Arbery about nearby burglaries. Arbery's mother told NBC she can't move on.
I try, but when I laid Ahmaud to rest back last February, a part of me left also, and it's painful.
Immediately after the shooting, police interviewed Arbery's killer and two others involved in the chase and let them walk free. Arbery had been dead for more than 2 months when a national outcry erupted after cell phone video of the shooting finally leaked online. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation took over the case the next day and quickly arrested the three. In the past year, Georgia finally passed a hate crimes law. Last week, Republican Governor Brian Kemp asked Georgia lawmakers to all but eliminate an 1863 state law authorizing private citizens to make arrests. The prosecutor first assigned to the Arbery case cited that law in concluding the killing was justified. I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and those were our news headlines. And now we kick off part three of our Sojourner Truth special covering the mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington, D.C. that was held on June 20th, 2020. During today's program, you will hear more testimony, solidarity messages, and performance from this historic event. Poor and impacted people who are often not heard from in the United States were given the chance to speak out. They shared their stories of personal hardship with the world and shed light on the importance of coming together to tackle racism, poverty, the war economy, and ecological devastation. Let us hear from them now.
My name is Lois Swimmer. I am a Lakota Native born woman raised on the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Reservation in South Dakota. I am a mother and a grandmother. I have experienced the profound ways that poverty has affected all people in this community and in this country. And I have experienced how systemic racism often makes these struggles worse for people of color and Native people like me. Growing up, my family, the poorest in this wealthy country, the poverty and low income rate among Native American people is very likely higher than 65%. Me and my family are part of. I left the reservation as a teenager, but I see how generation poverty and systemic racism affects people in Kansas City too. Currently, my income is only $470 a month. My partner works for the same property management company as me and has had for 15 years. He makes $10.50 an hour. Our rent is $600 each month, all utilities paid. That means close to 50% of our income goes to housing. The majority of my neighbors in Kansas City's Northeast neighborhood are poor immigrants, people of color, and poor whites. Almost 60% of us are tenants, and we struggle to pay our rent as it is. In many ways, the struggle of Native people is mirrored in the struggle of all oppressed people against the continuing injustices of inequality, systemic racism, and poverty.
I am honored to be a part of the Poor People's Campaign. This country was birthed by the attempt of genocide against us, and it didn't work. And we are at a point in this country where this reckoning over the racist birth of this place must happen. Our fate and our destiny is intertwined with our Black relatives, our other people of color, our LGBTQIA2A+, people who are newly arrived to this country. Our future will be something we create together.
We demand that our rights as Indigenous people be protected and respected, including our lands and resources, and the freedom to exercise our culture and religion. We demand sovereignty for all First Nations, constitutional guarantees, human rights, and treaty protections. The first chapter of this country must be told so that we can build a true foundation that will support us all. This is why we are changing the narrative. We won't be silent anymore.
Did you know that there are 45 million immigrants in the United States? 11 million of them are undocumented. Did you know that undocumented immigrants pay more in taxes than the wealthiest 1%, but they are blocked from public services? Did you know that many immigrants are considered essential workers, but yet they've been harassed and separated from their families? It is time to hear from them, their voices, their pain, their hopes.
Since the DREAM Act was not passed, temporary protective status, known as TPS, was rescinded. Ever since the president initiated the zero tolerance policy, in order to separate children from their parents at the border, life has continued to only become more difficult for immigrant families. Separation of families doesn't just occur at the border, it occurs here in our own state. Our immigrant families continue to bring us horrific cases of discrimination, racial profiling, and abuse by ICE, and being dehumanized.
No somos delincuentes.
We are not criminals.
No somos animales, como nos dicen.
We're not animals, as they are
somos
calling us.
Personas que venimos a trabajar.
We are human beings that come to work.
Queremos salir adelante.
We need to progress.
Queremos estudiar.
We need to study.
Y queremos que nuestros hijos sean gente de provecho.
And we want our kids to grow up in a society, in a good society.
Todos somos seres humanos.
We are all human beings.
Y necesitamos derechos.
And we need rights.
Respeto.
Respect.
Y que nuestra dignidad no se nos quite.
And that they should never take away our dignity.
This is why we demand an immigration system that protects immigrants' rights to build communities and strengthen democracy.
An end to detention, deportation, and a stop to building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. I have lived in the U.S. for most of my life as an undocumented immigrant. I have seen countless immigrant communities forced to live in poverty because the immigration system is working as intended to create fear and control over our people. Immigrants and all working class people must unite to create a system that values humanity over profits.
This is the reason why we are joining the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, to ensure that our communities can thrive, grow, and have the future that every single person in this country deserves.
In communities all across this country, the Poor People's Campaign is mobilizing, organizing, registering, and educating people for a movement that votes. And there have been so many people who have died and who have given their lives and paid for the right to vote. And so today we are standing strong against extreme forces of racist voter suppression that keeps us from the polls.
The Poor People's Campaign is strictly nonpartisan, but we are deeply political. This is not about left versus right. This is about right versus wrong. This means that we do not endorse candidates, and we will never bite our tongue if an elected official or any political party runs from the issues of systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism or militarism and the war economy.
And we need to vote this year like our lives depend on it, because they do. And I can hear Queen Mother Fannie Lou Hamer saying, because we're sick and tired of being sick and tired, we must be at the polls. We must show up.
Hi, my name is Erica Alexander, and I'm very happy to be in support of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Many of you know me from the roles I've played, but I was born in the mountains of Arizona. Both of my parents were orphans. My father was an itinerant preacher, and my mother was a teacher. We lived the first 10 years of my life in a hotel called Starlight off of Route 66. I'm here to tell you right now that voter suppression and racial injustice destroys the dreams of ordinary Americans who are extraordinary in their possibilities.
Did you know there are 52 million low-income and poor voters in this country?
And over the past decade, we've seen 27 states pass voter suppression measures.
These voter suppression laws target Black, Brown, and Native communities. But the laws that are passed when people are brought into office through voter suppression affect people of all races.
They wouldn't be fighting us this hard if they didn't know the power of our vote.
And in this pandemic, we are witnessing an even greater attack on our democracy.
And let's now hear from the people on the front lines of this crisis.
My name is Braxton Brewington, and I am a senior at North Carolina A&T State University. I don't see a difference between gerrymandering and the three-fifths compromise. I don't see the difference between racist photo ID laws and a poll tax. Ever since Black people and women have earned the right to vote in this country, we've seen the suppression of democracy sweep across this nation and unfortunately penetrate the state of North Carolina. In fact, voter registration here in the United States originated as a method of disenfranchisement, as a way to subjugate poor people and immigrants and young people and people of color and women. Fast forward to 2018, where North Carolina serves, unfortunately, as the national poster child for racial and partisan gerrymandering. My own campus, North Carolina A&T, has become a prominent victim of voter disenfranchisement. The largest public HBCU in the nation, now enrolling over 12,000 students, was divided into two different congressional districts right here in Greensboro. And they did this to us intentionally because they know the power of our vote.
I'm from Dodge City, Kansas, known in history as a cowboy capital, as well as the wickedest little city in the West. And the latter still holds true today. It's a Latino majority community run by a group of people as diverse as a 1950s TV ad, which is to say, not at all. Access to the polls should not be one of those issues that has become partisan, but unfortunately in Dodge City and across the country, it has. It's a city with nearly 30,000 people and 14,000 registered voters. Those voters have one polling place located in one of the few affluent and white areas of town. It's the most burdened polling location in Kansas. This is what happens when democracy is not valued and left to those who simply don't care if it doesn't affect them.
My name is Maria Colville, a native of Trinidad and Tobago, who have been living and working in Massachusetts for over 30 years. in the medical field as a CNA, a PCA, a companion. There are systems in place to ensure that I don't succeed. You can't achieve your goals or dreams when you are working for a wage that does not even allow you to meet your basic needs. I thought my issues was just that, mine. I found out I was not alone. Millions of people have the same problems that I was experiencing. We are all hostages of poverty, primarily because we lack the knowledge of truth. We are the solution to every problem that we face. In your brokenness, to unify, mobilize, come together, because then we are stronger than the forces against us. Broken, busted, and disgusted in one voice, speaking truth to power. I found my voice when I joined a cause bigger than myself. That cause is you.
This is why we demand a restoration and expansion of the Voting Rights Act.
An end to racist gerrymandering, same-day registration, early voting, and an election day holiday.
We also demand that people who are formerly incarcerated have the right to vote. They have paid their debt to society, and they are human beings. We demand that they have the right to vote.
It is time for us to come together and build a movement to assure that democracy will survive. And that's why I'm part of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival.
Hi, everyone. I'm David. To vote is to be heard. To be heard is to bring about change. So, in this moment, use your power, use your vote, bring about that change. That's why I'm part of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival.
The National Panhellenic Council, representing 9 African-American Greek letter fraternities and sororities, are affectionately referred to as the Divine Nine. They are proud today to be a part of this digital justice gathering, the Mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington. We raise our letters high as we join with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival to build a movement to force this nation to address the interlocking crises of systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, militarism, and the war-based economy, and the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism.
My name is Vanetta Cheeks Reeder. I'm the 34th National President of the National Panhellenic Council, Incorporated. I am also a proud member of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, Incorporated, and together we rise.
I am Casey A. Coleman, International Second Vice President of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated, and Chairman of the National Panhellenic Council, Incorporated, National Undergraduate Leadership Council. Together we rise.
I am Everett Ward, General President of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Incorporated, and Chair of the Council of Presidents of the National Panhellenic Council. Together, we rise.
I am Glenda Glover, International President of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Together, we rise.
My name is Reuben Shelton. I'm the Grand Pollmark of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity, Incorporated, and together, we rise.
I am Dr. David Marion, the Grand Basilis of the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity. Together, we rise.
I am Beverly Evans Smith, National President and CEO of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Together, we rise.
Greetings. I am Valerie Hollingsworth Baker, and I am the International Centennial President of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, Incorporated. And together, we rise.
I am Deborah Ketching Smith, 24th International Grand Basilis of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, Incorporated. Together, we rise.
Hello, this is Andre Manson, 22nd International Grand Polaris of Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated. And together, we rise.
Hi, Michael Crystal, International President, Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. And we're proud to support the Poor People's Campaign Virtual March on June 20th, because together, we rise.
Did you know that 8 to 11 million people are homeless and on the streets right now? 1.5 million of them are school-aged children. But in this country, we have more housing units than people who need them. We throw away more food than our families can possibly eat. And we have the best healthcare technology in the world, but the worst provision. This is a system that must change. It's now time to hear from the front lines of this crisis.
My name is Anu Yadav. I'm an artist, I'm a playwright, and an actress and an educator. I started out doing this work, doing housing organizing as an ally, or so I thought, to public housing residents who were protesting the demolition and forced relocation of their homes. But when I lost my housing, healthcare, and income all at the same time, I was terrified, panicked, and I went to the people that I thought I was an ally to because they were guiding me. I am the daughter of Indian Hindu immigrants to this country, and this movement is for my father, who struggled with steady work, who blamed himself for not having enough for his family, who was in and out of the psychiatric ward of a hospital and who killed himself when I was 10. This movement is for my mother, who raised me and my brother without anybody around, without anybody. And this movement is for me, and this movement is for you, each of us, all of our family members, because no one gets left behind.
I myself am a worker for IHSS. I'm a care provider. I'm a single mom. I just barely got into low-income housing in Fireball. And I have been homeless, not necessarily sleeping on the streets, but with my child, have had to live with somebody because I could not afford to rent in my own apartment. But thanks to low-income housing, I do now. And my life's getting a lot better. And my mom had died out there. And it's not something I wanted to have to deal with, but I do, and I'm here because